And we are back. Rob, we've got somebody new, and this is actually close to your heart, our next guest, isn't it?
You mean the air traffic control side?
I mean the air traffic control side.
Yes.
We have Christian Carnes. He's been an air traffic controller at the Atlanta Center for the past 15 years. He's a graduate of Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. He's also the union facility representative for the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Christian, thank you so much for patiently
hanging in there with us to get you on the radio. No one knows what that means except us, but thank you for being patient. Thank you. Welcome.
Very welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. So tell us a little bit about NACA's presence here at EAA AirVenture 2015. It's great to see you.
NACA's presence here, first of all, we're all volunteers here. And we have several booths that we've set up. We have a booth kind of back behind here on the main road, and it's for pilots and anybody to come by to ask a controller questions. And we have seen a very busy traffic through there. Everybody's coming in. Why do you do this? Why am I told to do this? And they're asking questions. And with everybody having laptops or iPads, they're bringing up the examples and say, I come in through here. Why do you make me do this, or why can't I do this? So we're able to explain to them what's on our side. And then we also have another booth set up in Innovations, and we have Raytheon, NAV Canada, Lockheed Martin, and Thales is in there with the equipment that we use. So we encourage the people to go over there, and it's kind of as if you're sitting there. We have the controllers there to show you this is what it looks like for us. This is why we may do this.
What makes a person want to be an air traffic controller? Did you grow up saying, I want to be an air traffic controller?
I grew up wanting to be a pilot. And my first intentions were to go to Embry-Riddle to become a pilot. I did get all my pilot license and stuff and doing that. And then I'm always talking to the controllers. And I kind of said, you know, I like that other side of the job better. So I pursued that and got a minor at Embry-Riddle with that and then continued on. And when I finally got hired, I knew I made the right decision.
I got a question to ask you. Do you find that the experience you had learning to fly helps you as an air traffic controller?
Yes, very much.
Are there a lot of air traffic controllers who fly?
There is. There is a lot, yes. And okay. That's my personal belief. And I think it's because I understand what the pilot is doing. So when the pilot is coming in for an approach to an airport they're not familiar with, I understand that. So I don't overload them with one big clearance. I will break it down and try to help them so they're more comfortable going into the airports.
So you understand if there's some weather around and stuff like that, when a pilot says unable, they're trying to tell you, I can't go that way.
Correct.
Because I've had a discussion with an air traffic controller once or twice who didn't think, because they couldn't see it raining on their scope, they wanted to beg to differ with me. And I was like, hello.
No, ultimately, you're in control. Yeah. We can give suggestions and show you what we're showing. And it works both ways also.
Absolutely. We negotiated a settlement that worked for him, and it worked for me, too.
No. What I mean by working both ways on that part is we can see weather that's embedded
that you can't see. That's absolutely true.
When you go in around one thing and you say, I'm ready to come back, well, there's another one. I think you need to maintain your present course. So that's what I mean by working both ways.
Yes.
We see other stuff that's embedded that you don't, but then some of the light stuff that we don't see, you do. And some people are more comfortable going way out, and some people will skirt it.
So. Well, and then there's the passenger comfort. I'm very cognizant of the people sitting behind me. Even if they're friends and family, I don't want people to be super uncomfortable, so sometimes I'll want to wiggle around buildups that if I was by myself, I know I'm just going to get a couple of good, you know, bumps going through there. It's not going to hurt the airplane. It's not going to hurt me. But I'll tell the controller that I'd like to deviate for buildups, and if he kind of queries me, I'll say for passenger comfort.
Communication. Communication is key.
How about because it really scares the pilot and I want to go there?
Oh, I'm usually very, very clear if it scares me that I'm not going to go there.
You can hear it in their voices.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, I was always curious. And now, I don't know if I've ever mentioned, I mean, I spent 10 years as a controller a long time ago. And I know what I how I got involved in it. But I'm curious, your perspective as a center guy now for 15 years, what makes for a good controller?
Good controller has to have great work ethic. You have to have show dedication to your job for the air traffic control. It's a continuing training throughout your whole career. Nothing is the same as it was when you walked in. Airspace changes, procedures are changing, the equipment is changing. You're always constantly training. So you have to be really dedicated, and you need to be, you know, you're given a schedule. Everybody's dependent on you to be there. It's usually done with the volume of traffic and things. You have to show up being professional and, you know, and like I said, dedicated to the job. I think a person really needs great listening skills. You need to be able to multitask. So while I'm doing my job and separating the aircraft and assisting all the pilots, I'm usually two or three steps ahead, but I have to have the listening skills to hear the readbacks that I need from the pilots to make sure something doesn't go wrong on that.
Wow. So I guess I'm wondering, too, that if you had people that were interested in being a controller, I mean, what kinds of, is there a program, not a program, but I mean, the requirements, oh, I should be good at this or I should be good at that academically. I mean, is that a factor anywhere? I mean,
I think a lot of math comes into play big time. Somebody who's really good with math, somebody who can be efficient in what they do and maintain their concentration while they're doing what they do and not get rattled by things. Stress is a big one. You're going to have to be able to have the ability to deal with stress.
You guys think in 3D too. You have to be good in spatial geometry, I would think.
Yeah, I think you got to be in geometry. You got to be able to see the overtakes and see aircraft that are 300 and 400 miles out in comparison to aircraft coming from a different direction that are only 100 miles out. They are very well going to be in confliction due to the winds and the speeds and the different things that's coming. You got to be able to see that much further out. So the geometry of them coming together, yes.
So here's a controller question then. How many aircraft have you ever had to talk to it on this frequency at the same time? Where does the brain kind of burn out?
The brain?
Not burn out. That's probably not a fair way to say it. But when you reach your limit, I guess.
It's dependent on the complexity of the traffic. We have some sectors that are our ultra-high sectors that, you know, occasionally you can get them as high as 40 aircraft in there. But
wow.
you're saying hello, you're monitoring some confliction points, and if everything's good, you almost, the only thing you say to them is hello and then goodbye when you switch them. So handling 30 to 40 of those aircraft is not as difficult, but then you can come down to a lower sector that is doing sequencing for in and out, in my case for Atlanta, sequencing the traffic in and out of Atlanta. And I maybe only handle 15 to 18 airplanes before I'm overburdened because I'm given so many clearances. And I'm watching so much to see if I need to adjust something. Did I give the right amount of turn? Did I give the right amount of speed reduction or increase? So the more complex it becomes, the less I can do.
Well, when you're vectoring people for, you know, you're lining them up for Hartsfield, I mean, how far out from Atlanta do they sort of start saying, okay, here's what the sequence needs to be?
I work for the southwest side of Atlanta Center, and we're starting to vector aircraft and use speed control about 350 to 400 miles out.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really far out. It surprises me because I talked to Atlanta for a long time in a lot of directions in the southeast.
Yep. And that's just in my airspace. They have the time-based metering going on, and the traffic management unit is going even further out. So the sectors or the other centers that I butt up to, Houston, Jacksonville, and Memphis, TMU is putting restrictions on them for them to meet this time-based meter time. So it's even further out. It's almost getting to the point where it's from where they take off from the ground. There's a time window that they need to hit to take off to fit into a slot to land at the threshold.
And that's almost what they're looking for someday in the next-gen,
yes,
perfect
part of next-gen
world.
Yeah.
But it really is amazing. And of course, we're not even thinking about – a huge chunk of bad weather in there somewhere.
Yes.
That's right in the middle of where you normally send everybody.
Yep.
That probably really makes life even more difficult, doesn't it?
Yes. That's where we work. That's where the stress level goes up. Every pilot needs the, you know, we have to call the weather. We have to make sure that they are aware of it all and get them around it, show them how other aircraft are going around it. And just because the weather's moving, it may work for a while, and then they want to go back the other side. So you got to mingle all that and still, yes, continue sequencing and getting them in makes it very difficult.
I know just what he's talking about because I went from Mount Airy, North Carolina, down to around Benton, Tennessee. So I came right across, and there was weather coming in from the northwest. And I was listening and talking to Atlanta Center rather extensively, and they were brilliant. Knoxville was brilliant, and we actually got in where we wanted to go, which was McMinn County that day.
Okay.
But the point was that listening to the sequencing and watching how you guys handled us all, trying to stay around that weather and stay out of it as much as possible. Yeah, it's just brilliant. It's fun. It's like a really complicated dance.
Yeah.
Well, it's important, I think, for people to listen on the frequency, even though you're not talking to them specifically, isn't it?
So most of the time,
they can learn.
Yeah, most of your questions could be answered.
Sometimes I know, right, I know you're going to call my traffic because I hear you calling me mm-hmm. as traffic.
Yeah. You know, the next call is going to be to you for the traffic.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, Kristen, where can people learn more about air traffic control and NATCA and what people like
well,
NATCA you
has
are doing?
Has their own, we have our own website. It's natca.org. There's a wealth of information on there and plenty of tabs to go through to see what's going on. And CTI programs are highly recommended. The government puts out hiring notices. So you go to, I think it's FAA.gov, and on there it tells you when they're having an open bid for previous controllers or an open bid for anybody, or if it's college students or what. And then they just go through and fill out the process, and then they go through the FAA part, which I'm not very familiar with all the details that they do.
So have you ever been sad that you became a controller, not a pilot?
No, it's the greatest job in the world.
Hey, great. Listen, Kristian, thank you so much for joining us today on EAA Radio, 1210 AM and 96.5 FM.
Thank you for having me.